podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
What is happening, everyone? Welcome back to the Cop Eye podcast. It is another stat show, and we did promise, well, we hoped that Liverpool would come back from another stat show to have another win, and they've listened to us and done us in a good way. So yeah, nice one, lads. but yeah, as always, I'm Mick. I'm joined by Mike Reid from Opta. Mike, how are you doing?
Hey Mick, yeah, not bad. Feeling much better about the Reds after the game at the weekend. So all good.
Yeah, well, there's a bit to get through. We've, of course, the 3-1 win. Liverpool back to winning ways. Quite a few changes in the game, which we'll talk about across the season in all comps. And then there's a bit of hours between games from Opta analysts, which is just mind-blowing the way that you can even get these stats. That's just I love stats like that. It reminds me, that one, which we'll get onto, reminds me like the one, was it last year or the year before, where they were like time wasted on goal kicks, just stuff like that. I fucking love it, I don't know why. Just to prove that teams take longer than us. I just love it. Probably because I'm a petty bastard, but yeah, it works in my favour. and then yeah, get into a bit of Everton with like most goals and stuff. But yeah, what were your thoughts then on just on Fulham before we get stuck into the changes and stuff? Because we were hoping it was going to be a return to winning ways. It was a return to winning ways, and I think gradually as the game wore on, of course, the way they get back in the game, it's like, you're going, oh, fucking hell, staring down the barrel again. Like, have we got enough to come back into it? And I think second half, we didn't click into full gear, I guess, but the stuff that we were showing, I think, was the signs of, like, just having the confidence back and getting some goals from open play as well was massive, I thought.
Yeah, it's one of them games where it's a proper banana skin fixture is Fulham away, because they've actually got the seventh best home record in the Premier League this season. There's only the current top six that are ahead of them. So yes, Fulham, I think down in, is it 12th or something like that in the league, but their home form is 7th. So it's one of them where, especially given Liverpool's recent form, where they've only scored one non-penalty goal in over the last four games, it was a bit like, oh, well, that's not a great sign going into a game like that. So that was the worry. And then obviously there was all the lineup changes, which we'll come into, which was sort of out of necessity. But yeah, it was one of them games where before it, you're just thinking, I don't care how, just win. And in the end, I think Liverpool deserved a win. So that was good. It wasn't just a case of, some games where you've just got to, you don't play that well and screw it through. I think Liverpool played okay and certainly were a better team on the day. So yeah, coming off the Atalanta 3 days before as well, a long journey. I don't think it was ever going to be a comfortable win. 3-1 probably makes it sound more comfortable than it was, but yeah, it was a deserved win, I thought.
Yeah, Neil Atkinson on the Wrap said something interesting, was like, if this result happened, I don't know, 2 months ago, it would be like, oh yeah, we've played all right, we've won, you're over the line, next game. But because of the way we've been playing, it felt a little bit more like, oh, thank fuck, like thankfully. Yeah. We've played okay, like you said, not our best, not our worst, but we've played well enough to win the game. And yeah, Trent to get the first goal the way that he did. It was like the first one just before it, I think it was like 5 minutes before, Elliot on that side, and you're like, and of course if he scores top corner, you're like, fair enough. But you know Trent in them areas, he's just so dangerous. And then the second one, I was like, if he just pops this top corner here, and we had a discussion on WhatsApp like about how good he is. He's just he really is just a genius, and the way that he can, of course he has a few awry passes because how often he tries them long diags and all that stuff, but the ability of his passing and just to get us up in the field, especially he's so key for when we're not playing that well, because he alleviates that pressure into the right areas where when we haven't got him, and Bradley played so well. You can get Bradley up and down the line, you can get Robbo up and down the line, but just to have Diaz, Salah, Nunes, or Jota, Gakpo, whoever's up there, in a bit of space and having the ability to play it in the perfect place for them to run onto or just to counter and get and alleviate the pressure. He's just such a key asset for us, isn't he, in them type of games?
Yeah, he's my favourite player at the minute. He's just an absolute joy to watch. And Liverpool coped really well about him in terms of overall results when he was missing. But yeah, you just think, had he stayed fit all season, how much of a boost that could have been for Liverpool. Bradley's been absolutely fantastic, and Gomez has filled in at fullback fantastically as well. So it's not a criticism of them. We're just talking about Alexander-Arnold, one of the best players in the world, to be honest, I think. And yeah, it's them long passes he's got that from anywhere on the pitch, he might at any point play a pass that just completely takes out the opposition's defence in from any moment. And it could be his left foot as well. He's got it on his left foot, right foot. And it's frightening to watch at times. I mean, it's great for Liverpool fans to watch. But I can't imagine how scary it is for opposition to deal with him. Do you press him? But then if you press him, he might play a ball over the top of your press and you, someone like Nunes or Diaz or Salah's in behind you. Or do you back off and try and cover the space he's trying to pass into, but then you're just giving him all the time in the world on the ball. So he presents that sort of nightmare, no matter whether he plays, whether he was inverting a lot against Fulham or whether he plays as a wide fullback or even, you know, occasionally as a defensive midfielder maybe. But no matter where he plays, he poses that problem, and it's could be perfect timing for him to come back as well for Liverpool. When you look at, you know, there's only 5 games left and Liverpool are possibly going to have to win them all to have even a chance of winning the league, so to have Trent back is massive.
Yeah, and as we saw, well, you sent me quite a few stats floating around about Trent, and I haven't asked you to talk about this, but I've just sprung it on you because I forgot about it, but I've just remembered that Trent had got his 100th goal or assist, which I do love you debunking the myths and stuff that isn't true. And so yeah, he's on 98 apparently, isn't he?
He is on that. Yeah, I don't really get why Liverpool sort of went on Twitter and he's gone on Twitter and said, oh, proud to get my 100th goal involvement. Yeah, Opta and me, we have him on 19 goals, 79 assists. So I don't mean to debunk it in like a, oh, no, Trent's not that good. I'm trying, but yeah, he didn't get his 100th. So I don't really get where they've got that from, to be honest. But he'll get there. And we'd love it to be this season. Maybe if he can get another couple this season, that'd be fantastic. But he'll definitely get there.
Well, it's perfect time for, like I say, if he gets a goal in the system tomorrow night, then he's there.
Absolutely.
So the tweet that has been posted still stands just a little bit, a few days later. Yeah. So, and we were talking about the Trent goal, amazing. Gravenberch getting his first Premier League goal as well, a very good finish at a key time when you need them to go in, and he obliged. So fair play to him for getting the score sheet. And of course, you have to get on the score sheet as well, like he always does. But it was the changes to the game that, in terms of like personnel, that I think we were talking about before we started recording. Four games all away in 10 days, 3 away Premier League games in 6 days. You can't keep playing the same team over and over, especially with like Salah just came back from injury. He's probably feeling the effects of that. Confidence isn't maybe in his game the way it has been in the past. That can all change in a blink of an eye. We know that because how good he's been. But the changes were not enforced, I guess, but they were required for the games that are coming up, because we need to keep people fresh. And you sent me over how many changes we've made per game this season, and we've made quite a few, haven't we, over the course of the season in all competitions.
It's been a sort of, it's a feature of, you know, we went to the League Cup final, we went fairly far in the FA Cup quarter final in the Europa League, and being in the Europa League means you're probably tweaking your lineup a bit more. But in 53 games this season, Liverpool made 265 starting 11 changes combined. So if you average that per game, that's 5.1 per game. If you exclude the opening day of the season where you can't make any changes, it's 5.1 per game. Now, that average is the highest Liverpool have ever had over a season in history. The previous highest is 15-16, so Klopp's first season where he joined midway through, five changes a game, and basically Klopp was working out what the hell to do with the squad he'd been left with, and he was trying basically every player that he could and seeing who fit in. And of course, there was a run to the League Cup and Europa League final that season as well, so he had to make changes on the runs to them as well. So there was a lot of factors that contributed to that. 312 lineup changes Liverpool made that season, which this season won't beat that because there's not enough games left to beat that now, but that will remain the record. But the average this season at the minute is higher. And if there's more changes against Everton, which there could be if McAllister's and Salah's and Nunez and Szoboszlai and Konate and players like that might come in, this average could increase a little bit, you never know. So yeah, it's been a feature of the whole season. If you look through the list as well, third on the most changes is 07-08. Remember, Benitez used to be known for being the tinker man, where a lot of Liverpool fans got annoyed, really, at one stage, how often he would tweak the team. He'd leave Torres out for no reason and just or rest him, seemingly, or whatever it was. So there was 4.9 changes per game that season. 21-22 is then fourth with 4.7 per game, but Liverpool went to every single cup final that season, so that explains that one, where you're having to make a lot of changes to do that and use your squad. And then fifth is 2019-20, where that is only fifth, really, because of that Villa Cup game where the kids had to play it in the Club World Cup. So they had to make 11 changes twice in a row. And then again in the Shrewsbury Cup replay, where Klopp let the kids play that one and then left the seniors out for a break. So again, that was two sets of 11 changes. So that's why that one's in there, I would say. But yeah, this season to be topping all those in terms of the average. And it has been necessary, and it strongly sort of links to that Fulham game with, as you said, it was six changes from the previous Premier League game in that Fulham game. And there'll be more. When you're playing four away games in 10 days, you can't name the same lineup every time. You know, it's something that teams like to be able to do, and Arsenal have been able to do it a lot this season, where just name the same team. But, you know, you can't get away with that when you've got four away games in 10 days. It's just physically impossible to ask the players, certainly your midfielders and attackers, to do that, because it's such a, you know, the game is so fast-paced now. Physically, it takes a toll on players. So I think Klopp's got better and better over the years at utilising the squad. Last season, we had that many sort of injuries and problems. The average was three changes a game, and this season it's five, so two more a game. So there you perhaps see the issues last season, where this is why we're better this season. We've got more options to change it when needed. Last season, maybe we didn't have that so much. So I think it's probably an underrated aspect of he knows exactly when a player needs a rest and who can play this certain game, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the amount of enforced changes as well, like you said, like the injuries and stuff, and then players coming back, thankfully, and then, like we mentioned on the last show, the one before, like the rhythm players being, having to go out to allow the injured players to come back in. So we're all trying to give players the rhythm, and in doing that, you've got to make the changes. And the fact that we've made the most on average so far, and the fact that where we are, I think speaks to how good we've been. I think because, like you said, Arsenal gives like an unrealistic insight into what all clubs could do, but I think the way they do it is just like, I just don't think that's feasible for someone like us, I guess, for them. I mean, I don't think it's sustainable over like 2-3 years in terms of just naming the same lineup. You'd have to try and keep it fresh, especially if you want to, like, they didn't get through in the next round of the Champions League. You'd have to do changes. You'd have the squad to get you through the bigger games as well, which is something that we're really good at. But yeah, let's move on to the, like I mentioned at the top of the show, the Opta analyst graph, which I said I absolutely loved seeing that, because I just wonder like how many hours has gone into that to get that together. So like average time between games, like in hours, and yeah, of course Liverpool at the top of the list, and I just think it's not by much in terms of, I guess, Man City are up there as well, but I think it says a lot when like we mentioned before we started recording, like Guardiola's in the press recently mentioning like games and like unrealistic to ask players to play in this day and then be playing back on this day and X, Y, and Z and all other stuff, but Liverpool still remain the shortest amount of time between games, which again I think it's another testament to, we get all these shitty fixtures at times. I think it's another testament to how we're dealing with that and how well we can just cope with. Of course, we've mentioned on the show loads of times, like the half 12 kickoffs after international breaks and all that. But this one, I think, just shows how, yeah, something that needs to maybe be looked at to even that out a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, that's you know, a point I think needs to be made, that this can't go on for certain clubs. You know, you can't have, they shouldn't, you've got to avoid, 3 days is obviously the closest you can play game to game, but you've got to avoid, for the health of the players, teams playing 3 days apart too often, because it is, you know, that's the demands of the sport now. That's so hard to do. And that's what Guardiola was saying. Why was he playing a FA Cup semi-final 3 days after he's been taken to extra time against Real Madrid in a Champions League quarter-final? It's just, there was no need for it, because they could have played on the Sunday, given Coventry and Manchester United didn't have a midweek game. They're the ones that get the Sunday game. They could have had the Saturday game. It makes total sense. And Liverpool at the minute are on this run of 4 away games in 10 days, every single one of them 3 days after the other, and they're all away from home. And that's tough. It really is tough. And then that relates to the brilliant graphic you mentioned from my colleagues at The Analyst, where yeah, so if you look at the average of all Premier League teams over the whole season, how long a gap in, they've done it in hours, that each team has on average between games. Liverpool have the shortest average between games. Now, yes, Liverpool played the most games, so they were bound to be up there, because you've got to fit all the games in, so there's going to be less time. But even so, they've only played one more game than Man City, and yet it's yeah, as you mentioned, it's 5 hours. Basically, Liverpool's average is about 4.8 days between games. Bear in mind that does include international breaks and things like that. Arsenal's, it's more like 5.5 days between games. So that's maybe part of why you see Arsenal name the same team more often than Liverpool can, because they've got that, they're averaging that little bit more time between games that Liverpool have not had the luxury of. Man City sort of between the two then. So yeah, it's a really interesting graphic, that. And I think that they've timed it well with Guardiola's comments. Even Arteta's been saying it, that he's their fixtures congestion is a lot, and you can see by the graphics, nowhere near as bad as their title rivals. So you could argue Arsenal have had it better in that regard. Yeah, it's a really, really interesting little graphic, really, just to show. And yeah, of course, when you've played more games like Liverpool have, you're going to have a smaller average. Of course you are, because you've got to fit the games in. But I think it's a problem that football is it's only getting worse for players now. And I know back in sort of the days of the 70s and 80s, teams used to play one day apart. They used to be, a long, long time ago, games on Christmas Day and Boxing Day. So you'd play literally two games in 2 days and regularly. But I think with sports science and with how much more demanding the game is now physically on the players, you know, players in the 80s used to go home and have a drink, and now they're certainly not allowed to do that. The finely tuned athletes now, the professional athletes that, you know, and the recovery is so precise now. They've got various, they'll know all the stats behind the players, oxygen levels, breathing rates and everything when they're recovering, these clubs. So this is such an important aspect of the game now, and we've got to look after the well-being of the players. And as you say, for Liverpool to have had the shortest average and still be in a title race with 5 games to go, you know, you're almost proud of the players, really. And again, it speaks to how good Jurgen Klopp is, that he's been able to manage that workload for the players and work with his physios and medical staff and his assistants to get the team through the season, if anything, and touch wood, we can still have some more success at the end of it.
Yeah, definitely. And especially like when you mentioned Arsenal as well, like they've played 6 games less than us so far. I think that, yeah, being able to just name the same team as often as they are, I think that has an impact, of course, those, because you're playing less games and you've got more time between them, so it all adds up. And I suppose, like you said, the sports science stuff, where Klopp always says, like when he gets asked about players, oh, I'll see what I get told, if he can play or not, and he relies on them to tell him the answer, because they have the stats and all the stuff that he probably isn't that interested in. He just wants to know if he's available or not, and he obviously relies on them. So if someone says they're not available, then he's going to put them on the bench or and give them maybe the last half hour or whatever. But like you said, excitingly, thanks to the Fulham win, we are still in a title race. It was a must win, because it was a win or bust, and I guess it's the same for every game now. So we need to be looking ahead, I guess, to Everton tomorrow night, which, yeah, I never look forward to these games. I absolutely hate them. Like,
I'm the same.
Old Trafford and Goodison, I just think it's just a horrible, horrible game. But it's one where they're probably safe now after beating Forest at the weekend, most likely, especially after all the Ferrari, Ashley Young and Notts Forest putting out their official tweets. Like, I had to check that wasn't a spoof account. That I was like, this is mad. But yeah, they're probably safe now. So hopefully, in a way, they're going to be scrapping. Of course, it's going to be a massive game for us, but them and us. But I'm just hoping that because they are probably safe, it might be a little bit more like they can maybe scrape a draw in their minds. I don't know, any way that we can potentially swing it, it can go in our favour, then hopefully it does. But I just feel like either way, it's going to be a massive, massive game, innit?
Yeah, well, the derby always is. It's one of the first fixtures you look for when it's released, don't you? And obviously this time it got rearranged, so we're now having to play at a different time to when we fought, because Liverpool were in the FA Cup quarter-final when we were supposed to be playing Everton, so it's been changed. But yeah, it's one of the first fixtures you look for, isn't it? To be honest, Liverpool's record at Goodison isn't that amazing. It's unbeaten in, I think it's 12, but 9 of them have been draws. It's something like 4 of the last 6 have been 0-0, and that is painful, to be honest. They're painful watchers sometimes, where, you know, I always say this, Everton away is a tougher game for Liverpool than it is for anybody else in the league, because of the rivalry and because Everton don't want to see Liverpool do well. No matter what position Everton are in the table, no matter what situation they're in, they don't want to see Liverpool win the Premier League. They don't want to see Liverpool in the Champions League. If it's whatever Liverpool are fighting for, Everton don't want them to get. So it's that, there's that added, it's like Arsenal playing Tottenham. It's a little bit tougher for Arsenal than it is for anyone else. And that's just the reality Liverpool have with Everton. So it's a massive game. Yeah, there's not, we don't often win it. As I say, yes, it's a long unbeaten run at Goodison. But in terms of wins, there's only been 3 in that unbeaten run. One of those was a couple of seasons ago. Salah got 2 at Goodison. Jota got another, and it was a 4-1 win. I think that was a midweek game as well, if I remember right. I'm remembering off the top of my head there. I think that was a midweek game. So we'd love more of the same. Without a 4-1, that'd be lovely. But yeah, it's we say it every week, and I will keep saying it. Just win. I don't care how. It really doesn't matter how. The performance almost doesn't matter. It's just get the 3 points.
Yeah, especially in games like these, the performance like literally is out. It goes like cliche style out the window. It really does, because you just need to win these games. Especially like you said, they're going to be want to stump us as much as they can. I can just see it now. Pickford rolling over the floor and just wasting time and the usual stuff that he lives for. But yeah, we need to make sure we're on the front foot and as best as we can, because we know if we get an early goal, then they're going to want to maybe come out and try and get back in the game. So it's going to open gaps for us. So we need to be on our best form. But one of the stats you sent me over was most league goals against Everton, and Mo Salah is in there. He's in there, and he's quite high up. I think you mentioned, like, before we started recording, like, surprisingly so in a weird way, because it is one of them fixtures that, like you said, we don't, it is always usually a draw and whatever, but like, to be where he is in that list after the amount of games he's played is pretty good.
Yeah, so I've given you the all-time league goal scorers that Liverpool have against Everton. Rush is top, 13 league goals against Everton. In all comps, Rush scored 25 goals against Everton for Liverpool alone, which is absolutely frightening. But yeah, 13 of those are in the league. Gerrard got 9, but in 30 games, a lot of games for Gerrard, so he got 9 goals against Everton. And then Harry Chambers, he played Liverpool in the 20s, really, 1919 to 1928, he played Liverpool. He's got 151 goals for Liverpool, but so quite a good goal scorer for Liverpool in that era. He got 8 goals in the league against Everton. And then you've got Mo Salah, level with another sort of pre-war player, Dick Forshaw, on 7, but Salah's played fewer games than Forshaw did. So, yeah, 7 goals in 10 games, it's a pretty good rate, especially in, like I say, 4 of the last 6 at Goodison have been 0-0, so he's been involved in a lot of these 0-0s and still has a good record. He's got two at Goodison that couple of years ago, as I say, so that contributed to it. He got two in the reverse fixture this season. So, yeah, you sort of forget that he has scored quite a number of goals against Everton. So that's you know, people have been criticising his form of late. It's the first time he's sort of had a lengthy-ish sort of muscle injury in his Liverpool career, where he's been out for a sustained period of time because of a muscular injury. I don't think that's really happened. He had the shoulder one with Sergio Ramos mid-season, with the end of the season, when in the Champions League final. He's had another couple of niggles. I remember Choudhury injuring his ankle in a game against Leicester when, you know, it was the season we won the league, but he wasn't out for long then. So there's really not many times he gets injured, and he's come back. People are sort of a bit critical of his form, despite the fact he's still Liverpool's top goal scorer this season. He's still one of the top players for goal contributions in the entire Premier League, despite the fact he's missed 2 months of the season and he's trying to come back from that injury. So, yeah, it's Mo Salah we're talking about, and we hope that he can improve on his record against Everton. One more second joint third all-time Liverpool league goal scorers against Everton. And you know how he loves the record as well. He'd love to have a crack at. I mean, Rush is six ahead of him, so he might struggle, unless he stays quite a few more seasons, he might struggle to beat Rush's record, but against Everton. But yeah, you know how he loves a record. So fingers crossed, I'm sure he'll be back in the lineup after getting rested on at the weekend against Fulham. Fingers crossed he can continue that good record.
Yeah, if Trent can get his 100th goal contribution and Salah can go
as an assist
level with
Salah, yeah.
Yeah. Let Salah can go level with Gerrard on 9 and get two goal contributions. Then that would be it. I mean, I'm just being picky now. Like, I'll take an OG in the last minute. I mean, that won't be good for me health, but it'll be good for the celebrations. And yeah, just in the list as well, I've got to mention, of course, Divock Origi, 6 goals in 9 appearances. Level. I always think that's a mad one because someone posted that a few years ago, and I was like. A few years ago, last year probably, I think after his goal, his last goal for Liverpool, Origi, he's scored the same amount of goals as Fowler in his fixture, and that just seems crazy to me. It's just a mad one, isn't it?
Yeah, because Fowler, as you can see in the list, he played 17 Premier League games for Liverpool against Everton. Origi played 9 and he only started 4 of them. And has as many goals. Fowler's one of Liverpool's greatest ever goal scorers. So it's just mad how Origi just seemed to turn up against Everton and basically punish them. Whether it's a 90+6 winner from Pickford flopping at a Van Dijk mishit shot against the bar, or whether it's, you know, he scored 2 in that 5-2 game the season Liverpool won the league. He even scored that in 16-17. His last Premier League goal, still to this day, his last most recent Premier League goal for Liverpool was against Everton in I think it's April 2022. Comes off the bench, Liverpool starts struggling to break down Everton. I think it was 0-0 for a long period of that game, and he gets a goal in that game. So yeah, just an astonishing sort of rate of goals. And so he's on 16-9, Salah 7-10. It's a similar sort of rate, but Origi minutes per goal is far better because he only started 4 of his 9 games. So Salah's started all 10 as a contrast. Yeah, bit mad, really.
Yeah, just what a guy he is. And I'd love that to be his last goal, like his last Premier League goal against Everton. And it's for us. I just absolutely love it if he doesn't get any for Forest in the league. Just get like cup goals at Divock, lad. Don't be scoring in the league for them. Because that'll be a nice little way to cap off your Premier League career, coming back and still not score another goal. But yeah, nice one, mate. We'll leave it there then, because there's quite a few other stats we could go through. But only so much time, and of course there's the massive Everton game tomorrow is going to be huge and a massive for what we're trying to achieve this season. It's going to be I can't wait for it, but I'm also scared a little bit. It's always that weird feeling of like excitement and trepidation whenever you go to Goodison, even when they come to Anfield. It's just a horrible game, but hopefully we can crack on and do it. But yeah, nice one, lad, for jumping on.
Cheers, Mick, thanks for having me.
No worries. Nice one, Mike. And yeah, nice one, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you all very soon. Ta-ra.
I'm Jamie Carragher, and you are listening to the Cop Eye Podcast.
Social Podcast Network.